I am not the world's most technologically savvy person. Last Sunday, I was sitting in the officiant's chair at the end of the gospel reading. Lindy was reading and then preaching. And I heard this noise, this strange noise, wondering what it was, looking at other people, and realizing it was coming from my pocket. So there's only one pocket on the right side of the alb, so I have both my phone and the receiver for the microphone in this pocket so I can access both. I use the phone for a clock. And somehow I had pocket dialed the family text group, FaceTimed. I FaceTimed the family text group to my whole family. And the sound that I heard was my son clearing his throat, lying in bed in Los Angeles. And he wasn't really looking at the camera. He was kind of lying there, and he was listening to the gospel. I couldn't figure out how to turn it off. So I didn't, especially since he was listening, and I had tried, and I saw a red circle. What do you do with a red circle when you want to turn something off? You push the red circle. Well, that was Larkin, a member of the family, to engage her, and she was sitting in the back pew, wondering, what is Dad doing? So I realized I couldn't turn it off, so I just turned the volume down so we didn't hear Ryan clearing his throat. And he listened through the whole sermon and later commented about it and thanked Lindy for the words. So we were essentially simulcasting the service, which is not a bad idea. Some churches do that. In fact, I read about one church a few weeks ago, the preacher in a church that simulcast to people who were shut-ins at home. And the preacher was talking about technology, and at some point he said something like, all we have to do is say, Siri, order me more toilet paper. Well, this went out to everybody's home. It's amazing the power of the preacher in the day-to-day life of the parishioner. True story. This is all to introduce the collect today. It's an amazing prayer that we begin the service with after our confession. And talking about the swift and varied changes of the world. How will our hearts surely there be fixed where true joys are found? So this collect is an amazing and raises this question. How do we truly listen for truth in a world of chaos that we will never control? As was said yesterday at Grace Cathedral at a conference by Reverend Nadia Bowles Weber, doesn't matter how many organizers we buy and what our closet looks like, we are not ultimately in control. How do we listen for the truth and respond faithfully? Listen what else the collect says. Bring into order the unruly wills and affections of sinners. Sorry, friends, but that's you. That's you and me, all of us. Being religious, going to church, thinking we are religious, only means we have to look harder at our own subtle unruliness. Not because we might think that somebody else is worse, because we might think that we're not. Are you with me? Because whether you are or not, it's true. Right? Then the collect says this, grant us the grace to love what you command, God. Grant us the grace to love what you command and desire what you promise. Desire what you promise. Fix our hearts on the joys, on the right stuff, on the good stuff. Help us be wise and loving. How do we listen? How do we listen in the midst of chaos? How do we bring into order unruly spirits? How are we grounded in the good? So these questions made me think of the conversation we had at the vestry meeting last Tuesday, where individual vestry members take turns to do a devotion. We're reading The Naked Now by Richard Rohr, that wonderful Franciscan priest. And Lisa Krieger, it was her turn, and her chapter was on dualism and non-dualism. So I want to do a little teaching this morning and get a little abstract, but only in order to change how we behave. It's like prayer or worship sometimes. We are in this mysterious, abstract place, but we're there in order to be changed, to change our behavior. So, Rohr says to understand Jesus is to understand that Jesus was the first non-dual religious teacher of the Western world. And if so, if we're going to be followers, maybe we should understand what he means by that, non-dual versus dual. So a definition, another word for dualistic thinking is egoic, in the words of Cynthia Bourgeau, Episcopal priest, egoic thinking, our egos, right? What's in it for me? What's in it for me? How will I look if I do such and such? So this is something sometimes we think about consciously, sometimes unconsciously, right? So here's a quote from Rohr to help us understand what he's trying to say. The dualistic mind is essentially binary, either or thinking. It knows by comparison, opposition, differentiation. It uses descriptive words like good, evil, pretty, ugly, smart, stupid, not realizing that there may be 100 degrees between the two ends of each spectrum. Dualistic thinking works well for the sake of simplification and conversation, but not for the sake of truth or the immense subtlety of actual personal experience. Most of us settle for quick and easy answers instead of any deep perception, which we leave to poets or philosophers or prophets. Yet, depth and breadth of perception should be the primary arena for all authentic religion. How else could we possibly search for God? Depth and breadth in perception. He goes on to say, obviously, we need to be dualistic to function in practical life as teacher, nurse, scientist, or engineer. It's helpful as far as it goes, but Rohr says it doesn't go far enough. The dualistic mind cannot process things like infinity, mystery, God, grace, suffering, sexuality, death, or love. This is exactly why most people stumble over these very issues. The dualistic mind pulls everything down into some kind of tit-for-tat system of false choices and two simple contraries, which is largely what fast food religion teaches, usually without even knowing it. Without the contemplative and converted mind, honest and humble perception, much religion is frankly dangerous. So there's the key, honest and humble perception, both honest and humble perception. To follow Jesus is to do both. And here's why, the last quote. It seems we are all addicted to our need to make distinctions and judgments, which we mistake for thinking. Most of us think we are thinking, yet almost all thinking, even among highly educated people, hello, is repetitive and immensely self-referential. That is why all forms of meditation and contemplation are teaching us as a way of quieting this self-protective and self-aggrandizing mind. After a while, we see that this repetitive process cannot get us very far, simply because reality is not all about us and our preferences. And the last thing I want to say that he says is, this more holistic knowing, where your mind, heart, and soul and senses are open and receptive to the moment, just as it is, allows you to love things in themselves and as themselves, not dividing things in a world that's too divided. So let's take this abstract thought about dualism and non-dualism and apply it to the scripture today, because the scriptures today and every day are about a new perception, a deeper perception, a new way of seeing to allow us to come out of our egos and to come closer to God and to find true joy. That's what it's always about. In the Isaiah reading today, Isaiah quotes God saying, "Do not remember former things. I'm about to do a new thing." The psalm is about restoring with joy a painful past. St. Paul is writing satirically to the people of Philippi, where they're obviously playing these games about ego and class. I'm a better person. I'm a better person than you are. A better pedigree, right? We have gained Christ, Paul says, to eliminate pedigree. This is something new, and it's not binary. It's not either or. It's not comparing yourself to another, thinking you are distinctly better, or thinking that you are distinctly worse. Not as good. Press on, Paul says. Press on to this new vision to follow Christ, who shows us that way. So in the gospel, we have this patron saint of non-dualism and the amazing person of Mary of Bethany. Mary and Martha, the sisters to Lazarus, right? We remember the story of Mary and Martha. Martha is very practical and dutiful. She's the host. She's taking care of things. It's all good. It's all good stuff. But Jesus says something to her in that other gospel, to Martha. He says, "Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed." And so in today's gospel, Mary shows that one thing. Because Jesus is present, her life has been changed. She knows love. She knows new life. Her brother is alive. He's there at the table. Her sister is there. Her family is there. Judas Iscariot is there. And what does she do without saying a word, as far as we know? She takes that alabaster container of ointment, which historically we understand to be about a year's wages of the typical worker, a year's cost, and she used for burial, and she takes that ointment and she pours it on Jesus' feet, and she anoints him and dries with her own hair. Why does she do that? Why would she do something so impractical? Because Jesus is present, and Jesus is the source of the love that she has known. Jesus is the source of life, of newness, and she is full of gratitude. So much that she has to show it with how she treats this person. There and now, in the present, she is changed, and she shows it. And all Judas can do is critique in the name of practicality. And he has a point, even if he's accused of being a thief. He has a point that money would have helped the poor. But Jesus says, stop, stop. First, there is something more important. Why are you giving money to the poor? Do you know how you are loved? Do you know how blessed you are? Do you know what you truly desire? Can you really surrender to the moment? Can you be open to true gratitude for the love and life and promise in your life? Do you know in your heart that you are blessed? Start there, Jesus says. Start there. Be present to this holy presence, this invitation to open yourself to vulnerability, to compassion. Why? Because this is what leads us to true metanoia, to true change, to embody the Spirit of Christ, to be caring and compassionate and loving ourselves for all the right reasons, to oppose those who hate, but not become the hater, to help those who are hurting and poor and suffering, but not to make ourselves feel better, but because we care and love those people and we see those people and we understand those people as our brothers and sisters. It is very different, this gratitude, this love, this understanding that frees us to be in a new place. So as we approach Holy Week, friends, let us open our hearts to the love of Christ, to the life-changing strength of Christ's mercy and blessing, so that we can love people and things in themselves and as themselves and fight the good fight. In the name of Christ, may it be so. Amen.